The following podcast is intended for mature audiences. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Naked Wizard Media.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Smashing the Dome, the Under the Dome podcast, but not the kind of podcast you'd think. This is the Under the Dome podcast where we hate watch Under the Dome because it's so worthy of our hate and our love. That's quite a conundrum. It's a kind of a paradox.
Yeah.
But I'm your host. My name is Carrie, and I'm joined, of course, by Sherry. Hello, Sherry.
Hello.
And I have to let everyone know that we have a new member of our panel starting this week. Because Under the Dome is so wonderful, we had to bring this guy in and get his opinion on these shows. And if you listen to any of our podcasts, if you listen to Galaxy Class or to Damage Him, I'm a podcast, you know him. Kirk is here. Hello, Kirk.
Hey.
Welcome to Smashing the Dome.
Oh, thank you.
Aren't you happy to be here?
I'm very happy to be here.
I got to say I'm a little disappointed, actually. Not that you're here. But we decided to bring you in on the fun here, but we picked probably the best episode of season one to bring you in on. I would have rather
other than the pilot, yeah.
Yeah, I would have. Would have been much better if you would have came in on one of the worst ones. But have no fear, you'll have your moments. Now I gotta say, for anybody that was listening to the Smashing the Dome podcast, you might have noticed that we haven't released one in a while.
Like a year?
Yeah. We did the first four episodes and then we kind of stopped. And the reason was...
I wanted to kill myself.
Well, twofold was I didn't know if... Season one had ended and I wasn't sure. So maybe they're going to fix everything in season two. And season two is going to be really good. And then where do we go? It's a podcast about hating it the first season and the second season is really good. So I kind of put it... We kind of put it on the back burner. And said, let's just see how season two pans out. And well, let me tell you, after season two aired, we said, we've got to bring this podcast back. And we had to add to it by bringing Kirk because science-y.
Because it's science-y.
And Kirk's all about the science. So we thought it'd be really, really fun.
Definitely.
Now, this episode is called Blue on Blue. It's the fifth episode of season one. And this is probably like we were actually rewatching it for the podcast here. And Sherry and I were going, this is actually a pretty good episode. Like, that's unfortunate. Yeah. But I guess you got to have a couple of good ones every now and then.
Sometimes just random aiming, you will hit the target.
Yeah. If memory serves, I think this might be the last really good Under the Dome episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all downhill from here, folks. But the more downhill it goes, the more it benefits us. Because we get to do what we love doing, and that's rip the show apart. And like I said many times, it's not in that vein of being so bad. Like, people probably say, well, why would you pick Under the Dome to do this for? There's so many bad TV shows. But they're not bad in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Dome is so bad that you can't, it's like, I said it before, it's like a car wreck. You can't look away. You have to. And as of the recording of this podcast, it's just been renewed for a third season. So we're good for another few episodes at least.
Yeah.
Now, I know better than to ask Kirk this because Kirk's not much with the reading of the novels.
No, I didn't.
And so I know you have not read that. I have read the book. And I'll tell you now, Kirk, before we even begin with these podcasts, I enjoy the book. The book is better than that's an understatement. The book is much better than the television series. The book, they deviate from the book after about the first 5 minutes of the pilot episode.
Okay.
Yeah. So now before we go on though, I want to get kind of Kirk's insight here before we go on, because Kirk had to kind of catch up. He had to watch the first four episodes to get into it.
Sorry. It wasn't even the first 5 minutes. It was.
Well, it deviated from the beginning, but yeah. it really went completely off and after about the first 5 minutes.
Was there a bisected cow?
There was a bisected woodchuck. In the book, yeah.
Cow would have been cooler, though.
It would have. Visually. They improved on that for visual purposes. But one of the examples is the character of Angie is dead on page 10.
Well,
in the book. Yeah. So, and what he does with her is not nice. She's dead, but her character doesn't leave the book. Yeah. Junior's not normal in the book.
Well, Junior's not normal in the TV show.
At least the first season or something.
No, but he's still psycho. Yeah.
Now, I want to get your views before we go any further. From based on the first four episodes and stuff, are there what, if anything, do you like about Under the Dome? Is there anything in the series that you like? Like for me, it's
I have one.
For me, it's the concept. I like the concept of what would happen if you were trapped and whatever.
Yes,
but pretty much after that, it kind of leaves my approval. What's yours, Sherry?
Julia's hair is really pretty.
Julia's hair, yeah. Julia's hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Women, she wakes up like that. Women work for 3 hours straight to try and get their hair look like that.
Yeah. She's in a rainstorm. 5 minutes later, flawless.
Yeah.
Flawless.
So is there anything that you like?
The concept is interesting, but so far it's been like, well, getting to know the characters. It's going to be a little weak and stuff like that anyway.
One of the things that Sherry and I have talked about many times is the acting leaves a little to be desired, but the writing, especially the writing of dialogue on this show, is atrocious.
Yes.
Now, are there any characters in your mind from at this point? Now, I know you've watched the entire series now before we've done this, but just up until this point, is there anybody that on the show that stands out to you as being a character that you'd kind of really like? Like either the performance or what the character is doing. Like, for example, Sherry really likes Dodie.
I love Dodie.
She's the radio DJ that's also the very smart.
Yeah.
Which is possible, I guess.
And I like Phil, too, at this point.
Mm-hmm. At this point.
Yeah.
The other DJ, I'm helping Kirk with the names because Kirk's not good with names in real life.
Yeah.
So
should have called him DJ Phil.
DJ Phil. DJ Phil and DJ Dodie.
Yes.
Nick becomes DJ Sheriff Phil, but that's...
DJ Sheriff Phil. But is there anybody that...
Everybody just seems very hesitant in their delivery. Like, everything just seems so... Everybody.
Well, there are a lot. There are a lot of actors.
Dodie, I think, probably like one of the worst ones.
Yeah.
What?
As far as acting?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. I don't know. I think Joe and Nori, but they're also very young. They're also... there's a lot of actors on this show without a whole lot of experience.
Watch Dodie on this show, and she's not that great at acting, but she was also on Breaking Bad, and she was only in one episode with Hank, who is Big Jim, and like just they have a scene later, and just comparing the two scenes, it's night and day. Mm-hmm. Like in Breaking Bad, they're amazing. Mm-hmm. In this show, garbage. And hot I think garbage.
That's the writing.
I love it.
Maybe it has something to do with the directing too.
Well, the directing too, because the actors can't. They can say it, but whether it can fall on deaf ears if they say, you know, I wouldn't say that. Or a character wouldn't talk like that. If the director says no, you say it that way.
Yeah,
they have to say it that way.
Yeah,
right? And a prime example of that is Dean Norris on Breaking Bad. This guy is amazing. That's Big Jim. He's absolutely amazing on Breaking Bad, and this series. Sherry and I have asked the question many times, Dean Norris, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
Like,
to go from Hank Schrader
to Big Jim Rennie.
Big Jim Rennie.
And it's not so much his acting, it's what, as an actor, he has to say and do.
Yeah.
That's just, and can we get him some clothes that fit? That would be also nice.
His shirts are so tight.
Well, since his wife died.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
9 years ago.
9 years ago. We know this.
He's been wearing the same clothes. Yeah.
So this episode, Blue on Blue, was directed by Jack Bender and written by Brian K. Vaughan. It aired July 22nd, 2013. So, unfortunately, one of the things we can't use as an excuse for this show is dated. Well, it's dated. No. It's a year old.
You know what? Yeah. Just some things from the earlier episodes. That Junior... All you have to do is say you don't love him and he turns absolutely psycho. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's people out there like that. But
oh, yeah.
I'm sure there are. That's, yeah.
Are we in agreement that the pilot was pretty good?
Yeah, it was a decent episode.
And then the other episodes were, you could kind of see it. You kind of see it took like a step down every episode. This episode, it stepped back up a little bit. I thought this was pretty good. But, yeah.
And it's a good thing that the first person to go nuts is the cop.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always good. Handy.
Oh, and it's handy when in his nutsness, he kills the other cop. It's great.
Well, that's because the plot calls for auxiliary police.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which also happens in the book. Junior is given a deputization and has his friends join him. But his friends are a little bit more prominent in the book. Like these guys here that you see in this episode in one scene.
Yeah.
His buddies, in the book, they have a bit more of a role, and they're all just stupid idiots.
Junior had friends?
Yeah, Junior had some friends.
I don't remember them at all.
Well, they're seen in this episode briefly when I believe it's Nori's parents want to go looking for Nori. And there's two young guys that stop them.
Oh, they're his friends.
They're wearing badges. Earlier in the show, Big Jim tells them, I want you to find some auxiliary police officers. What about those guys on your football team?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right.
So.
Sorry, I didn't take that to mean friends.
Well, teammates.
Yeah.
Now, here's one thing I've noticed so far in this series. And then when the episode opens up with Joe and Nori, I find a lot of the times the exchanges between these two to be a little bit excruciating. Because what they're trying to do, well, Joe, internet fans have a nickname for him. They call him Exposition Joe because he has to explain everything to the audience all the time. Captain
Things
Obvious.
Things that are like right, that either just happened or are currently happening or on screen.
But what they try to do.
I guess he's for the blind viewers. Yes, explain what's happening.
What they try to do to counter that, though, is they try to make Nori be the conscience of the viewer. Nori gets the lines of saying things like, well, duh, you know, or you know, she'll say the obvious, too, but she'll say it in a way that the viewer might say it. Like, sometimes it works. There are occasions where she comes up with a line where I go, well, yeah. But a lot of the times it seems really forced.
Yes.
When you're watching the show. And you got to, first thing you got to remember, these are the two most inexperienced actors on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So for their part, I guess they're doing their best. And I think she's a little better than him.
Yeah.
I think she's a little bit more, has a little bit better acting chops than with this guy. That's not to say that he's not going to improve later on and stuff. He might, the more experience that he gets. And he's not terrible.
No.
But he's not very good though either.
It's not Troll too bad.
No. You will, and Kirk, I will warn you now, you're going to hear, as far as Nori is concerned, you're going to hear references on this podcast to her nickname, which is Forehead. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Yeah.
She's like I said, we were watching the episode. She's a cute girl. She's a pretty girl. But she's got a forehead on her.
She better hope she doesn't have receding hairline in her face.
Well, I don't know why she just didn't try headbutting the dome and see if it happen.
I could see her drawn on a newspaper comic with a huge forehead.
Oh, we shouldn't do that. But no, we should. And yay, Reverend Coggins is hearing messages from God. Wonderful.
Oh, and who needs the crazy preacher?
Yeah.
And the crazy preacher shows up, of course. Something that's unexplained and they might think could have linked to God. There's got to be a preacher
Stephen
there.
King. That's a Stephen King trope, the religious fanatic. He's not really a fanatic.
He made the religious fanatic.
Yeah, exactly. And Coggins is a character in the book. But that's about the only similarity.
He doesn't do everything in the town except fight fire like this guy does. Fucking brutality. I don't care, man.
You're talking about the actual fighting of the fire?
Yeah, or the causing, I mean.
The causing, yeah.
That was lead into that, yeah.
You thought he kicked that on purpose, right?
I was like, what are you doing? Why'd you do that? And then he turns around surprised and I'm like, huh? How did you not realize that you hit that? Like you full-on soccer kicked that thing.
And then nothing.
It almost bounced off the wall and came back at you, my friend. How did you not know that your foot kicked?
And then nothing.
Oh, and then let's just spread it around the room. Yeah. Give me my shirt here. I need to get this over around the room. Door where my escape route is.
Let's spread it around the room that was obviously drenched in lighter fluid.
Those picture frames? Why? They must have got those from China.
I wish you would have had them for that episode. And then nothing says let's put out a fire better than throwing a little bucket of water where there's no fire at all. Just on the porch. There's no fire there.
And well, really, let's just use our heads. A house is on fire and we're using buckets and garden hoses. Let's water down the neighbors' houses. Mm-hmm. That's got to go.
See, now here's the difference between the show and the books. And the show did this, and it's almost lazy to me. The book deals with a lot of things in it where it's like the air is, stuff can't escape, and the pollution in the town is building up and stuff like that. The book. In the show, they make
all
they,
of the residents were lobotomized, which you don't know.
Yeah. In the book?
No.
In the show.
In the show,
you,
yeah.
You don't know.
In the show, they make the dome, quote, porous.
Yes.
Barely. So
a little bit of stuff, a little bit of water can get through, a little bit of air can get through. And I think they did that almost so they didn't have to deal with issues that would probably turn up. Like, if you're trapped under, you're basically inside an incubator. The air is going to start being a problem.
Yeah.
Now, there are a lot of plants and vegetation and stuff. But
I don't even know how much you would need to support that many people. Right?
Do they still drive everywhere in the book? Or do they, like, immediately pitch the cars?
No, because that's one of the things that they say. They're like, we got to stop driving our cars. We got to stop doing this. We got to stop doing this. And if you notice on the TV show, she has a hybrid. Mm-hmm. Julia has a hybrid. Because it's fucking product placements there every episode. It's a Toyota. In case anybody wants to go buy a hybrid.
Oh, by the way, did you know the coal plants that they used to make that electricity that went into that car are actually polluting more to make that energy than your gas car? So hope your energy comes from a nuclear power plant or a water dam. Otherwise, you're not really helping.
So Big Jim here, at this point, who knows about Angie? He found Angie at the end of the previous episode. As I said, gets Junior to go get auxiliary, to go find your son is holding a girl captive in your bomb shelter. You're going to give him the responsibility to go find auxiliary police officers. Mm-hmm. Let's just take a second
maybe
here.
Maybe he might
this.
Be a little unstable.
No.
No. He's my son. He's a good guy.
He's just misunderstood.
Then I had the joke with Sherry when the families are visiting. And Linda sets the barrier up and says, put this tape across. We don't want people to get any. Then she immediately violates her own order when her fiance shows up.
I'm just going to go make out with the dome here.
Yeah, and go kiss the dome.
Everyone else stay back.
Everyone else stay back. I'm out of my way. I'm a police officer. That's one of those things, I guess. Good way to set an example by being the first one to cross the police line. You are the police officer, I guess, so it's okay. But I had to have a little chuckle with that one. There's usually so much more to laugh about in these episodes.
Get back or I'll shoot that dome, and it will shoot you. So it won't be my fault because it bounced off the dome. It's the dome's fault.
And
classic dome.
Yeah. Here is something.
You've been domed.
Here is something that every time you hear this, you just know. If you hear something or see something, and you say, and it sounds kind of important-ish, and you say, What does that mean? And someone says, who cares? You know it's going to be a big, big, big major thing, and you should have cared. Because
yeah.
as soon as DJ Phil says that, when Julia hears the transmission of the green at 1350, she says, what does that mean? He goes, who cares? That's just, well, you're on a TV show, so it's going to matter because,
yeah.
It's never good whenever someone says, who cares?
Do they know that their daughter's named after seaweed wrap?
Yes. Yes, they do. They look like the kind of people that would enjoy sushi.
They're gay, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Wait. Careful.
That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, sushi and all.
What? And
is this a fish reference, Kirk?
Maybe.
Oh. Come on now, we're getting lowbrow. We're getting lowbrow now. Yeah. Make a fish. Kirk apologizes. No, he's not apologizing at all.
No.
Now, here, there was one thing here where I found stupid was when Linda and Rusty have their reunion. And he's talking about they want to make a reality show about us. They're happy that they're famous. You're trapped under a fucking dome. I don't really. They want to make a reality show of me. I don't care at this point.
Oh, awesome. We're going to make all kinds of money. Oh, I'm going to starve to death and die in here, and you're going to make lots of money.
Yeah.
Well, at least one of us is happy. Oh,
now, Kirk, you've watched this series. Starving to death is not an issue.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Because they're luckily for hoarders and the ever replenishing Sweetbriar Rose Cafe.
It's like an episode of Simpsons where he's eating off the plate. And it just the piece keeps on reappearing every time he puts his fork back down.
Then you have Reverend Coggins. Does somebody want to curb the Reverend there? Because he's starting to the end is near. That's just somebody want to hit him with a baseball bat or something.
Thankfully, we're all gonna die.
Thankfully, Big Jim takes care of it.
Die for our sins.
Now we have a major plot point introduced here. With Nori's father, which I can only assume will play out into a major story arc in upcoming episodes and seasons, right?
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. No. I mean, how could they introduce this
and then just
the point? And let it slide? Yeah. They couldn't possibly.
And you know, well, you put that right alongside, you know, Julia's husband, which will be another major story arc that will be played out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Huh. And I,
the murder of Julia's husband.
Yes, yes.
By someone in the town.
Yes.
We don't know who.
Well, we know who. We know who. She just doesn't. But that should be a major plot that will be played out. Her relationship.
Absolutely.
With Barbie will be affected so much when she finds out the truth.
Well, last episode, she told him to fuck off.
Yeah.
And now she's holding his hand.
Well, you know that.
She was drunk, though, so.
She was just, you know, it was just at the end of her cycle. Okay. She was emotional. There's a dome cycle. She's got excuses. She's a woman, right?
Oh. Wow.
Did I just say that?
Yeah, you did. You did. You're really, You're really getting off on a good foot in this episode here. Sherry might kick you off the show.
It was the dome that did it to her.
Yeah, it's the dome. Well, and the dome is making you do this. What if the dome wants Kirk to say that these things?
It does. It wants me to be vulgar and mean and stereotypical.
And I like Skater Boy's news about
China.
About China wanting to attack. Typical. Oh, yeah. Look, a dome. Let's go to war.
Yeah. I don't understand that. Wow, an impenetrable dome. Let's break you through it. Let's throw a nuke at it. I'll throw a nuke at it. China's like, I'll throw a nuke at it.
I don't care.
I got some extra ones.
See, and now season one does not have Rebecca.
No.
So we have to have Dodie to be the science exposition
for
season one, if you've noticed.
Mm. Yeah, Kirk.
Which is, she's replaced by, I can only imagine who it's going to be for season three, because they're going to have one. In the book, Joe is the smart, he's like the really smart genius level high school student that knows all this sciencey stuff. I don't know why they didn't give it to him in the show. I don't know if they thought maybe the actor couldn't handle it, or I don't know, but they keep every season we get a new sciencey person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe Ghost Dodie could come back.
And,
oops.
And as we can tell, the science in this show is
impeccable.
Very, very accurate.
Impeccable.
Mm-hmm. Very accurate.
No holes.
I wonder if Dodie and also the actress that played Rebecca, if they were just like, no, I can't do this anymore. This is awful.
Yeah.
I have to put this on my resume. I have to go.
Like without giving things away, Dodie is not the sciencey character in season two, and Rebecca will not be the science character in season three.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if the actress just goes, I can't. I can't.
Human beings don't say this.
You made me the windmill, you made me. I can't do it. Now, I did not look this up. I don't know if you know, Kirk. I'm wondering if MOAB is really an acronym for Mother of All Bombs.
That's correct.
Is
actually.
It? Is it?
Do you want the history now?
Oh, God. Okay.
Okay. Well, it all started in Russia, of course. We're going to blame the Russians for this. They created...
Well, we can now because it's 2014. We can go ahead and blame the Russians.
Yeah.
Because they're being bad.
Well, yeah. Embargo. Embargo. Yeah.
Embargo.
Anyway, I don't know if they invented the thermobaric bomb, but that's what this is. It's a thermobaric bomb. And they created a bomb. It was huge. They used it in Czechoslovakia or someplace like this. And they called it the father of all bombs.
The father of all bombs?
That's right.
The FOAB?
I guess so. FOAB. It would have been like with a backwards K in there somewhere. I don't know.
One of those U's with the lines through it and the two eyes over it.
Yeah, and a sickle.
All right, we're going to get ourselves
in trouble. Anyway, in response, states decided to create their own. It's an impressive, impressive weapon. Actually, it is stronger than the weakest nuclear weapons.
Really?
Yeah. The way it works is it's got fuel inside of it, right? And most bombs, like say TNT or even plastique, they all have two components, well, three components usually. A binder, an oxidizer, something to contribute oxygen to the explosion, because most of these things are enclosed, right? And they need the oxygen in there to create their explosion. And they need something flammable. Well, this is just the same, except they use the surrounding air. So what it is a canister of fuel, usually like a reactive metal, a couple of reactive metals and a binder to hold them together. They'll explode the canister of stuff and spread it all over the place, and then they'll ignite it. Hmm. And that creates a prolonged shockwave, longer than like even an ampho bomb has a very prolonged shockwave. Well, this is even worse. And if they were using Moab, there would be like kilometers and kilometers and kilometers of destruction.
Well, that's pretty much what it looked like at the end there.
It's sciencey.
It's sciencey.
Actually, you should read up about them. They're pretty cool bombs. They can be used on small, like it doesn't, and they're not something that has a minimum scale, right? Like when you go nuclear, there's a minimum amount.
Right.
You can really do. But this, you can do it to any scale. And actually, I think I was reading something about them way back about using some type of thermobaric bomb to put out well fires, because they're perfect for robbing oxygen in the area.
Yeah.
At least the initial stage of pushing it, putting the blaze out anyway. So, yeah.
Hmm. Well, thank you.
It's all Russia's fault.
All Russia's fault.
But that leads me to a question.
They put out our wildfires, though. They could, potentially. Yeah. So thanks, Russia.
Yeah.
I don't know. It might make it worse. Just blow the fire all over the place. there's one thing, though. Okay, so the dome stops the pressure wave, but you could quite clearly see that it didn't stop the light.
Right.
That would get warm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, like say you're standing next to a campfire, right? There isn't this magical thing called heat that comes out of the fire. It's light that warms you up.
No heat, you know why?
And that's a big fire. I seen a mattress catch on fire and I had to step back like almost 20 feet. I could...
No heat, you know why?
Why?
Magnets.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
Hey, this is under the dome, man.
Kirk.
Unless the dome has a dimmer switch to filter out.
It's sciencey. Okay.
I don't care. I have an idea for what that dome could be made of.
Well, Linda did kind of cover her face and go when it happens. So
exactly it did look a little bright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It did look very bright.
So it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Weak. Weak.
All right.
It should have got dim or something. Like the dome should have got dim at that point, and when it exploded, then because otherwise there'd be problems. I'm sure that just that amount of light would have set stuff on fire.
Yeah,
you got to think it's more powerful than a bottom end nuclear weapon. Nuclear weapon,
but it did nothing. It just left like little smudge marks.
Or if you're Gene Hackman, a nuclear weapon.
Yeah,
nuclear.
Now, in which is not the norm, in a rather good episode of Under the Dome, one of the things I did in this episode I did not like is a very clumsy exposition scene with all the main characters when they figured out that the bomb was coming, and Barbie's explaining to him that Moab, what it meant, and the bomb, and they're saying, well, what? And then Linda, the cop, says, well, what does 1315 mean? And he goes, that's military time.
Did you confirm that? Did she say that?
I'm pretty sure it was her.
Okay. I want to check that.
Painted green for 1315. I don't need that explained to me.
No.
There's a bomb painted green at 1:15 they're going to launch it. I got it.
I think maybe your average CBS viewer might need that explained to them. Ooh.
That's a statement there, well, your average CBS viewer.
Sorry, so, 2.5 Men was very popular for a very long time.
Yeah, this is true.
My wife likes that.
Yeah.
I think Charlie's funny, but
no.
Honestly.
Yeah.
I don't see it and turn it on.
And then Jim has a good guy moment when he releases Angie. The only reason,
just because she's gonna die.
Yeah, the only reason being that we're all gonna die, so you might as well die free. Now
if I was Angie,
we're all gonna die? Well, how? They're gonna launch a missile. I'm gonna stay inside the bomb shelter for a little while,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go close those doors.
I've got like water down here.
So yeah, get some water. Yeah, there must be a drain in there because when he found her, the water was like thigh high.
Yeah,
so
well, knee high, I guess.
It was still higher than what it was when he came back in this episode.
Yes, it was at the mattress.
Yeah,
he drained it just a little bit so she could sleep on the sopping wet mattress.
Yeah. Now, Junior being a psycho and having some love issues. And being the most hated character on the show, that has got to be a story arc that's going to be played out in upcoming episodes of the season.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. You can't let someone get away with that.
And people just don't be like, yeah, I was a little crazy. I was a little crazy, but now I'm okay.
Yeah. Well, Angie appears in this episode to forgive him for chaining her to a bed in a bomb shelter by just him saying, I'm so sorry. I just thought I'd make you feel better.
I don't think that was forgiveness. I think that was resignation. Well, maybe. I'm going to die I'm in gonna like die. 5 minutes, so whatever.
Why spend my time screaming and running and getting shot in the back? I might as well just fucking play this shit out.
Yep.
I could see that.
Now, one of the strong points.
She wasn't like comforting him. Oh, I forgive you. Let me.
Yeah, no.
It's like, just come here so you don't shoot me.
Like, if they would have started making out, I would have been like, okay, really?
Yeah.
Now, one of the I think one of the better things in this episode, and one of the things that was praised by a lot of critics and viewers, was the montage leading up to the missile, where you see everybody kind of doing facing it in their own way.
Yeah,
and you have the music soundtrack and stuff going, and like you have Nori and Joe share their first kiss, and one of the things that people really liked that brought tears to their eyes was when Linda went to the place where her and her fiance had carved their initials into the railing of the thing there.
Vandals.
Rethinking her past, where someone like me just thinks, hey, look at the cop going to check out her previous work of vandalism. But I'm cynical like that.
Yeah.
Now, the missile hit, although perhaps not accurate in its depiction, as we may have mentioned, I thought was effective. It was a good scene. You have Nori and Joe kissing in the foreground with the explosion, and it was emotional.
They should have had a house in there getting like that was just on the other side of the dome getting just like totally destroyed. That would have been great.
Now I have a question. Do you guys think that if a dome fell over our community, and this is said in this episode that it's been less than a week, do you think that within less than a week our government would try to kill us all by destroying it? Or do you think they might research it a tad longer than that?
Well, we're in Canada here, and I'm pretty sure they wouldn't.
That damn Obama.
Yeah.
Thanks,
but
Obama
there, He's got an itchy trigger finger. He hasn't nuked anything yet. I'm pretty sure he's looking. I don't care. I'll shoot New York. I don't care. Just give me something to shoot it at.
If W had been would still be in office at all. Either that, or he
would have been nuclear,
or he would have been trying to find
half an hour,
or he would have been trying to find an armadillo hole, trying to get in there.
I don't like that dome. Yeah, I don't understand it, and I think I should destroy it.
First to the ranch.
First to the ranch. I need a break.
So, it was Linda.
Yes, Sherry checked and confirmed it was Linda that questioned. So the cop
didn't questioned what 24-hour time was.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what?
Jesus Christ!
Really? Painted green for 13. Okay, well, you don't even have to know what painted means, because green is the universal color for go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
13:15. What could that be? Come on, guys. I'm pretty sure my son could go, that's military time. Like, it's pretty
but
common.
Even if she had delivered it in a different way, not in a questioning way.
Like, she should have been saying
13:15?
She should have been saying, like, nodding her head and going, and 13:15. And then Barbie can finish the.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what, though? That was a pretty impressive leap of logic. Barbie got the Moab from the preacher.
Yeah, oh yeah.
How he knew that the preacher was getting some kind of signals through his earphone from the military, I don't know.
Because the dome wanted it that way, Kirk.
Yeah.
Don't question the dome.
And I hate your fucking name, Barbie. Honestly, fuck yourself.
I want once, at some point in this series, for someone to say, come on, Barbie, let's go party.
And then I would throw up, yeah. Then there would be no more reasons not to throw up.
I guess Julia is a Barbie girl, then, technically. Right?
Yes.
Yes. Sorry.
Life in plastic is fantastic.
Oh, God. All right. So.
Honestly, fucking Barbie.
Yeah. Well,
and it's not even Australian or anything.
You gotta blame Stephen King on that one.
That was a character name in the book.
Yeah.
Oh, it's bad.
Dale Barbara, and they called him Barbie. Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah. Anyway. So this episode ends
Kirk
with
is disgusted.
I'm almost looking at Carrie like it's his fault in a way. And I don't know why.
I'll take the
blame.
I just
really like it's just terrible. Honest, really, dude?
So this, you couldn't, Dale Smith, you couldn't do that? You could call him Smithy? It's all right.
Call him Barbara. That's okay. It's at least is his last name.
Yeah.
Well. Hey, B.
You know what?
Yo,
you
B.
know what? You know what? I just
then
figured
I'd
it out.
Shoot myself.
I just figured it out. It's his nickname that was left over from his hockey playing days.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Because isn't it like the first syllable?
The worst nickname.
The first syllable?
Usually.
B?
Usually. Yeah. Usually. Like, if Kirk was a hockey player, his nickname would be Stewie.
Yeah.
His last name's Stewart.
There'd be like 50
Stewies. I'm already there. I'm already Kinney. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know.
What would I be?
Well, see, I don't know, because your last, you're, I don't know.
You're messed up.
Because I wouldn't go Kelly.
No, it your last name's Keller, so I don't know.
Killer.
Killer, yeah.
Killer, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That was an
nickname.
Easy leap.
Yeah.
That's probably what they'd call you.
The final scene in this
episode. I'd be called that bitch.
So the final scene in this episode is the death of Reverend Coggins. Now.
Cool what this scene. Is, cool effect.
What this is supposed to do is kind of make us, because you had Reverend Jim kind of, he let Angie go. And then you can see in the scene where he's confronting Junior about why Junior did that. He's almost in tears confronting Junior. Yeah. So you're thinking, it's kind of make you think, oh, well, this character, you know. He's kind of making the turn to good. No, he just killed the Reverend. Yeah. And now, in a scene that was a cool effect, I'm not quite sure that if your hearing aid, I'm not quite sure that your hearing aid could kill you if it
well,
exploded.
Okay. Now, I do have a problem with that scene.
I'm just talking visually right now. The scene of him pressing his head up against the dome in the blood was cool looking. Now.
It should have, the piece behind his ear, not the piece in his ear, is the part with the battery.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Therefore, it should have just like maybe exploded a chunk of his skull off or something. Come on.
Yeah.
Just a little blood. Could you spend like $3 more on special effects? Get a squib in there, you know?
I think they wanted it to be sort of more of a slow thing. Like you just see the blood leak out. I think it was done for effect this time.
So everything else except hearing aids explode.
In future episodes, they do skimp on the budget on some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't wait to meet the kindergarten kid. That's the art director for this episode. That's the artist. It's gonna be amazing.
And I have another little problem.
You're assuming it's a human. I thought it was like an elephant.
I'm a guy maybe trying to hide some stuff, okay? And I'm in this dome. And I find out that the military is going to launch the largest possible bomb at the dome that's not nuclear. No one's going to watch. No one's going to be looking through this see-through dome to see me kill somebody.
No one's watching.
I'm going to kill this man right on the periphery.
There's not like 800 satellites all peering into this dome right now. Possibly looking at me. No. Yeah. No, I'll just do this here out in the open. Nobody'll know of my dirty deed.
It's fine.
Do these people realize that there would literally be 800 satellites spying in there?
Yeah.
Literally. I'm not even joking.
Oh, Coggins, I think I saw Jesus down in the cement factory tunnels. Do you want to go check it out and then just bludgeon him to
Jesus
death down there?
Jesus called to me. He said we have to go to the creepy tunnels that no one can escape from.
He said it's the pathway to Moab. Which is a place, actually.
Yeah. But you don't want to go there because it's evil.
Yeah.
Or so they say.
It's bad.
Just because they...
It's probably really
just
fun.
Just because the people there attacked...
And we all know that everything the Bible
the
says
Israelites.
Is true. Right?
Well, they may have attacked the Israelites, but they probably deserved it.
Yeah. Now... They probably deserved it. Wow. People are starting to type now all over the emails. Who the fuck is this new guy on your show?
Doesn't like the Bible.
That's it for this episode. We don't really rate them on here because really what's the point?
It was bad.
Well, yeah, they're all pretty bad.
It was okay bad. It was bad.
And just think, this is one of the better ones that we got Kirk to join in on. So there's so much more great fun to come.
Yeah.
Because some of these are so bad.
Yeah. At least what I really liked about this episode is that they finally remembered, we're under a dome.
Yes.
We should acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, have contact with people outside, do something other than just sit around the diner.
Speaking of that, Sherry.
Yep.
What is our Chester's Mill and Dome count for this episode?
Yeah. Oh, you're doing a dome count. Sweet. I was going to suggest
dome. That. We ended up with 20.
They said the word dome 20 times in this episode.
There was a real flurry at the beginning of dome.
Yes.
And Chester's Mill, we had 8.
8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a lot of times to say the name of the setting of your show.
Got
to
do a death toll, too. Well, I'll get you on that on next episode.
All right,
I'll go back and I'll check the death toll.
Yeah. All right. What was there dead in this episode? Just
Coggins.
Just Coggins.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Poor show.
Yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait to get Kirk's thoughts on some of these future episodes. See, it's great when we do this, and we know what's to come, which is why we invited Kirk because it started off just Sherry and I, and while it was fun. When the episodes kept getting worse and worse and worse, and especially when the science-y stuff started,
yes.
I said, well, we got to bring in the science officer from Galaxy Class into this and have some fun with it. So
how about,
more than happy to.
How about the magnets, animals using magnetic fields?
Yeah. Well, that you know what? Honestly, there's still jury out on that as far as I'm concerned. They're saying that like a lot of birds use magnetic fields and stuff like that. I'm not even too sure about that. I think we're not giving animals enough credit for to be able to spot landmarks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And even air currents and stuff like this.
Yeah.
I don't think we're giving them enough credit. Like it's some instinctual.
Would magnetic fields make a shitload of monarch butterflies hatch?
That's a good question. Well, I'm going to have to go get some larvae and expose them to extreme magnetic fields.
It's sciency.
Sorry.
Yeah. I just can't see a magnetic field, really. How would it? But the butterfly has like a cycle, right? It's a caterpillar for so long. It eats enough. Then it goes into its cocoon. It's in there for a specific number of days, give or take a day.
Yeah.
I don't see how a magnetic field's going to change that.
Unless it was making, I don't even know.
Because
like, is it supposed to be fall? Is it past butterfly season? Or is it spring? I don't even know what, yeah, like why.
What triggers them to go which way, especially monarchs? Monarchs are pretty much the exception in the butterfly kingdom of ridiculously long migrations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
I call bullshit.
I think it's a time thing because one generation goes down, one generation comes back.
Right.
It just happens when it happens. I think it's just a time thing.
It's unlikely that all those butterflies like
give a fuck about the magnetic fields.
They would have, so. Yeah. If monarchs are migratory and it was not the right season, they wouldn't have been under the dome to begin with or in the sphere.
Yeah.
That's right.
Hmm.
Well, we're not the only ones that watched this episode. This episode was watched by 11.6 million viewers.
Good God.
Finished number one in its time slot. And immediately following this episode, the show was renewed for a second season.
You know.
Now, after this episode, I can see why.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, it got great ratings. And the episode showed potential for a really interesting series after this episode. But then it makes you wonder what the episode of season two was that made them say, yeah, no, we'll renew it for a third season.
You know what?
I'm thankful for it.
Well, it took a long time.
I know what it is.
Like it was October 9th that it was renewed, whereas last year it was renewed
on the fifth episode of the season. Yeah.
It was all the creationists that wrote in and said they loved the show.
Mm.
It was the creationists.
Yeah, we're probably going to get into a bit of the science versus faith debate in this podcast.
The preacher's dead.
So batten down the hatches, folks, because
the preacher's dead.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right.
Where's your God now?
It's the dome's plan to kill the Reverend Collier.
The dome is God. Yeah. Now.
Well, that's one of that could be one. That's now one of the theories. So is that it for today?
I believe so. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, and we're going to have a lot of fun with this series, I think, and hope you'll join us next time as we take a look at a very ominous sounding title, The Endless Thirst. Ooh.
Is there going to be like vampires? Ooh. I hope they don't sparkle.
No, I think it has to do with water.
As long as they don't sparkle.
No. God, that's not. Shall we talk about Twilight? All right.
No.
We should not draw attention to it. We always, when you come in contact with Twilight, you don't blink and walk away slowly. Don't turn around.
Don't make eye contact.
Walk back away.
Yeah.
Very slowly.
Don't blink?
Don't blink. You blink, they could turn, you could be somewhere else, right? You keep your eye on them while you back away slowly.
They're like weeping angels.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I can't wait for many more discussions about this show. It's going to be fun. All right.
Going to be fun.
So for Sherry and Kirk, once again, thank you for listening. Join us next time. And until then, take care. And hey, keep watching, because the more you watch, the longer this show is going to be on the air and the more fun we can have. Thanks, guys.
This has been a Naked Wizard Media production. Executive producer, Carrie Kinney. For more information, visit nakedwizardmedia.com.